So today I'm talking to Paris Whittingham, who is a friend of mine and a photographer. I'm speaking to him about a situation that he told me about on a phone conversation we had a little while back. And when he told me about it, I was really impressed that he spoke to me so honestly and also thought that it would be interesting for him to share this story with other people who might be in similar situations. We were talking about your ex-girlfriend, and you guys had sort of a tumultuous relationship.
Definitely.
How long were you guys dating?
We met when I was 22. We dated until I was 23, almost 24, so about 2.5 years.
And how was the relationship tumultuous?
I think there were a lot of unresolved issues. We both brought baggage from previous experiences that, just kind of erupted in the relationship, but also ultimately became very violent. And the violence, you can say, started on a very subtle level, passively, but ultimately led to a physical level where at that point it was obvious to me that I was in a relationship unlike anything I ever could have imagined for myself.
So there was one incident that we talked about specifically where the two of you had gotten into a fight and it escalated and got to a physical level.
Absolutely.
Can you just talk me through what happened that night?
It was in the morning, and I've since discovered that most people, arguments and these sorts of domestic issues happen in the morning or at night. In the morning because you're tired or you're in a rush and you have somewhere to go, and at night because you're tired because you've just been somewhere and you're, irritable or whatever. And so in this particular case, as a photographer, I work a lot, and I was going to be doing a fashion shoot on the roof of the building where we lived. And it was early in the morning, the start of the shoot, and I believe the understanding was that my girlfriend at the time was going to help either with like small things in the morning, or there was some agreement, I forget what it was, but basically I didn't see her, I didn't hear from her, and when I attempted to knock on the door, it was locked, and it became this whole drama of like, I'm not opening the door, I am opening the door, but yesterday I was going to help and today I'm not. And when we actually got to speaking, the pressure I was feeling to do the shoot and make everything work well and be comfortable, and have everyone else be really comfortable. And I guess also her aggravation, which I didn't realize then, was just having all of these like strange girls in her house, erupted. And, something snapped even within myself where, not feeling heard, I restrained her physically, and then she like pushed my arm away really forcefully. And then, at a certain point in the conversation, she struck me and in the chest, and just at that point I did not react in a way that, looking back, I was even fully conscious. I honestly, what happened next, to this day, I don't understand it and it scares me, but I instinctively hit her back. And I'm 5'10", maybe a bit taller, and she is 5'4", 5'3". At the time, I weighed about 190 pounds, and she probably weighs 115. So there's a huge difference between me, on instinct or impulse hitting someone and her, and even that didn't connect with me. But the thing that I will never forget, and it's probably what scared me the most when this happened, was not that I hit her, and it wasn't that I believed that I caused her bodily harm or injury, but honestly, it was the look in her eyes when it happened. And it's a look that I've only seen one other time. It was in an argument that I had with my mom when I was like 15 or 16 years old. And it's just a look of utter disappointment, of utter just, like, you can just see the look of just utter, complete disrespect. Like, the look says everything. Like, I have no faith in you anymore. And I can say safely that, that was a huge turning point and really kind of perpetuated the downward spiral in our relationship.
In your personal history, you've had issues of violence come up before.
Yeah.
How has that come up for you before this?
Well, I think it's fair to say that most situations with domestic violence start on a personal level in your home before you're even dating or a close relative or a family member. In my own home, I was raised by my mother and my grandmother, and I can say that a huge turning point with my mother and I was an argument that happened in the morning when I was like, I think I was 16 years old, and again, she was in a rush to go to work, I was in a rush to go to school, and we just got on each other's nerves and, you know, struck a really nasty chord. And in this particular case, you know, my mom had like a pot or something and she went to throw it at me. And again, it goes back to what I said, that moment that between the action or the fight or the flight, where like, as opposed to just taking a hit from my mom, I instinctively like hit her back. And I saw that look that I just described that I ended up seeing like 8 years later, which is that look where you're like, men are not supposed to hit women. And when they do, like something is wrong. And I mean, you've just completely crossed the line. And I think what my mom learned in that moment was that she couldn't use the threat of physicality any longer, that it was inappropriate in our relationship for the threat of physical violence to be a factor in how, you know, her and I maintained a relationship. And it was a huge turning point for both of us because she realized that we had struck a completely different chord in our relationship, that we were no longer operating as mother and son or mother and child. Like, you know, it had gotten physical. So I ended up going to stay with my godmother for the weekend. And my godmother's like one of the most giving people I've ever met. And she's so genuine and just really giving and supportive. And I'd never ever experienced my godmother losing her temper or being angry. And she definitely looked at me and she's like, I am so disappointed in you. And, you know, I love you and you're my godson, but you can't live with me, you know. And if you don't work this out, then who knows where you're going to go, but that's your mom. And when you go back home this weekend, it is your responsibility to fix this. And also, I'll talk to her. I'll share what you shared with me in confidence, but that's just something you can't do. And being raised by women, I like to think that I'm very sensitive to women's needs and that I love women, that I'm very supportive, but I can also say that those are two distinct moments in which my behavior has not only been really embarrassing and shocking to myself, but almost like secrets, things that I would hope no one would ever find out about and judge me for. And yet, at the same time, on the inside, I judge myself about those moments constantly.
When you hear about high-profile men hitting their girlfriends, like Chris Brown or Brian McKnight, mm-hmm. What's your feeling when you hear about that?
The Brian McKnight one, you know, that happened when I was younger. I was like maybe 10 years old or so when it came out that Brian McKnight, you know, had a history of domestic violence in his family or in his household. And I stopped listening to his music. I stopped talking about him. I stopped, you know, caring about his work because I thought that was just out of line. And frankly, I'd say when the Chris Brown thing happened, it was a little bit closer to home. You know, we were both about the same age. I wasn't driving a car or anything like this, but and it never got to the point where the level of violence in my personal relationships, you know, erupted at that level. But I can honestly understand how it happens so quickly and how it happens without much consideration or mindfulness. And I think in situations like that, the biggest mistake we make is that we put celebrities on a pedestal as if somehow they're removed from these very human, very ugly acts of rage or acts of violence, and they're not. Domestic violence is not a celebrity issue. It's a family issue. It's a household issue. Like, it touches everyone, you know. And I found when I was 10, it was easy to pretend that that would never be me. I'd never be like Brian McKnight. But it's almost like saying, you look at a person who's drug addicted as an adult, and I don't think anyone grows up as a child aspiring to be drug addicted as an adult, but it still happens. And so it's really important to acknowledge that and just be upfront about it, that those things do happen. What are you going to do about it?
So what kept you from becoming the type of guy that physically abused his girlfriends and instead becoming the type of guy that saw that as a single incident that was an upsetting incident to you that you then wanted to talk about?
I called my mom immediately afterwards. I still went through with the shoot. I remember very clearly saying to my girlfriend, it was probably one of the hardest things I've ever said to someone, but I looked her in the face and I said, listen, this fashion shoot means a lot to me and I really want to do it. And frankly, if the way you feel about me right now is such that you cannot coexist with me in this space and allow me to do this shoot, and then afterwards we can resolve this issue, then let me know right now. I'll cancel the shoot. I'll send everyone home. But if you put me in a position to do that, then understand that you're now putting our personal relationship over my professional reputation. And that's fine if that's what you want to do, but I'm probably leaving after that, because that's just such a huge boundary being crossed. And both of us had like an agree to disagree sort of, you know, ceasefire for the shoot, and even a few hours or, you know, even days afterwards. But the first thing I did when the shoot was over is I went up to the roof of my building. I called my mom. I told her everything that happened, and I listened intently, you know, expecting her to just like, you know, rip me a new one. And she didn't do that. She made it very clear that she was incredibly disappointed in me. She made it very clear that this was something I needed to address immediately, because it only gets worse if I didn't address it. And I think that changed it, because, I mean, I was raised by my mom, so I'd be lying to pretend like I don't deeply, deeply care about her approval for the decisions that I make and the quality of life that I lead. It doesn't mean that I, you know, will do everything the way that she thinks I should, but, you know, with the situation is personal. It was really helpful, you know, to just hear it from a woman who I respect a great deal and who I've had my own problems with, you know, both in terms of violence and aggression. And, you know, my mom and I have been through a lot together, and, you know, we've overcome those obstacles. So to hear it from her just helped me kind of get back to earth a little bit.
As a feminist and as someone who feels very defensive of women's rights and women's safety, I always thought that the type of person that physically abused his girlfriend was basically just a villain. It was very black and white. And that's the kind of person that I wouldn't have a relationship with. And you're a close friend of mine. And when you told me about this, it really changed my perception of how these things happen and the ethical gray area within the individual. That it's not just about being a monster that hits his girlfriend, but about someone who tries very hard to be a very good person, having a moment of weakness and breaking from the standard to which he normally holds himself. Do you think that if there was more understanding about that moment and more of an attempt to heal the person who's causing the violence, mm-hmm. that it would lead to sort of more healing across the board?
Well, I think it's like, you look at our approach to medicine, like Western medicine, and it tends to be very reactive, that we treat the problem when it's like dire, when the person has already expressed the symptoms and they're like on their deathbed, you know, then we bring in the medicine. And you look at, let's say, more Eastern medicine, and it's preventative. Essentially, the goal is that you don't get sick. You know, that the medicine is in place so that you have a healthy life, and that in the event that you are sick, that you now will see a doctor who will help put you in a regimen to restore the balance of your health and then to continue preventative measures. I think it's that kind of thing, that at that moment where things erupt, it's pretty easy to say that, you know, my judgment got clouded. I didn't know what I was thinking. And yeah, for the most part, I really don't remember those. They're almost like blackout moments, you know, but I feel like there are other qualities of my life that have shifted, you know, in terms of how I deal with conflict now overall, that make moments like that, you know, the likelihood of them happening is incredibly low now compared to before. And I think as a whole, part of it is making a shift in terms of how you engage. So just because you're not physically violent doesn't mean that you're not abusing someone in a relationship. And I think it's a gray area that, unfortunately, you know, to just kind of give some balance to both sides of the argument, it's a gray area that women hide behind. Well, I don't hit him, so I'm not violent, you know, and it's a gray area that, you know, you even have very highly manipulative men that hide behind. I didn't hit her, so I'm not violent, but that's not true. Violence happens before the act of violence. It starts as a thought. It starts as a belief system, and if that belief system isn't addressed, then the acts of violence continue to manifest themselves on many different levels, which may not include physical.
So I was going to ask you if you could go back in time and recreate that situation with your ex-girlfriend, mm-hmm. what you would do differently. But it almost sounds to me like you're saying you would have created an entirely different atmosphere for your relationship and one that would lack violence.
Yeah, and even just a more open level of communication about when those feelings come up. Because I find that, you know, as a man in this culture, I'm encouraged to be the stoic voice of reason. And that even some of the most powerful women that I know in their professional capacities, I see them with their boyfriends or in their relationships with, you know, their husbands or, you know, with other men who, you know, may, they have relationships with fathers, etc. And I watch them turn into girls. You know, that they almost instantly take on a submissive role, you know, or the flip. They take on like a hyper controlling, you know, dominating role. But there's very few examples of relationships, and I see a lot of great examples with the couples that I work with as a wedding photographer. Outside of that connection that I have to these couples through my work as a wedding photographer, I only know one couple that has an incredibly healthy, balanced relationship. And that's my godmother, who I stayed with when I had the incident with my mother, and her husband. Outside of that, I do not see other examples. The other examples that I said that I mentioned are the couples that I work with, but I feel like had I not chosen to become a wedding photographer, I wouldn't even know that healthy relationships exist. Because there's so many examples of relationships that fail, and there's so many examples of, you know, couples where they're dealing with a problem and the first thing they do is they go tell their best friend. You know, the first thing they do is they go, you know, change their Facebook status. You know, and these issues, they just perpetuate acts of violence, whether or not people admit it, it's passive aggressive. And it essentially makes things much worse, because eventually you're going to have the conversation. And eventually the conversation, you know, just kind of like builds on top of stuff that builds on top of stuff. And the result is like a powder keg.
So if you could give advice to some kid in a relationship with his girlfriend, when he gets into a situation where violence comes up, what would you tell him to do?
I have a hard time, to be honest with you, answering a question like that in terms of advice, because I don't think that I've lived my life in the best example of the best practice for relationships where those things happen. You know, the example in my story, this was my ex-girlfriend, like not, you know, 3 girlfriends ago or, you know, 5 years ago. This is so recent for me that essentially my proving ground will be my next relationship.
You're still trying to figure this out.
Yeah, but I would say for myself, like what would I say to myself if a situation like this were to come up again? You know, part of it is, you know, something that my mom said to me a while back, you know, and she said this, you know, way before I was ever dating. I was probably 9 years old. But, you know, if you really want to understand how a man feels about women, then look at his relationship with his mother. Look at his relationship with his sister. Look at the relationship that he has with the women in his family. And that will be a better indicator to you of his relationship with women than anything he says or any other relationship with other women, because it really does serve as like, you know, the focal point of where he grows to make certain decisions and develop certain ideas and beliefs about how to treat women. And so, I mean, in all honesty, I found that as my relationship with my mother has improved and my grandmother, because for a while it was very rocky, and it isn't shocking to me that I had this huge blow with my ex-girlfriend at the time that I wasn't speaking to my mom. We went for over a year without talking, and I wasn't speaking with my grandmother. That's not shocking to me, like now, looking back. So I would say, you know, by focusing on that, by really evaluating the quality of a relationship, I know so many guys, you know, that essentially they treat their parents, their mothers, you know, men who treat their mothers, they put on their good boy look. They put on their, you know, their best behavior, but they're not very honest with their mothers about the lives that they're leading. You know, so they'll do a whole bunch of dirt in the background and throughout the week, and on the weekends with their moms, they're like altar boys. And I think one of the best qualities that has helped me a lot is that I think it's fair to say that for better or worse, my mother knows who I am. She has a good sense of where I stand on a lot of issues and on, you know, the good and the bad, you know, the positive and the negative. And as I've been more accepting of hearing her criticism and taking that, you know, heart that she helped bring me into this world and she raised me and I have a lot to learn from her, I feel like that has improved my ability to relate to women, you know, in my life.
When we first talked about this on the phone, I asked you if you wanted to discuss it publicly because I thought that your ability to speak so honestly about a difficult experience for you could inspire other people to do the same and could make other people in similar situations feel like they have someone to relate to. And your immediate response was that this was basically the biggest secret in your life and you would never talk about it publicly. Why did you change your mind about that?
I turned 25. I spent the day with my mom. We went to see Alice in Wonderland and we were having dinner. And it was on my mind a lot. And I mean, it's heavy to hold a secret that that brings a sense of shame. And frankly, I'm tired of carrying that load because, you know, that was almost 2 years ago.
And when this incident happened.
Yeah. You know, that was almost 2 years ago. I mean, I don't have an exact calendar. I could probably figure out the dates. It probably was 2 years ago at this point. And, you know, I'm still carrying that. And it doesn't benefit anybody. You know, not me, not anyone. And I think part of it is just understanding for myself that I'm really not the person that I was 2 years ago. And that there are tendencies that all of us have to live with. But, like, in this case, I mean, I think it's even fair to say I'm not attracted to the same type of woman. I'm not attracted to the same qualities in a relationship. That so many of the things that made that relationship possible are the very same things that would make that relationship impossible today.
Are you worried about your clients finding out about this incident, especially since you're a wedding photographer, and saying, oh, that guy hit his girlfriend, that guy hit his mother, and I want nothing to do with him?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, absolutely. I think we live in a culture of snap judgments and 30-second commercials and sound bites. And whether or not that makes us feel more intelligent or more comfortable or more adaptive, I think it is a fear. It's definitely a fear. And, you know, one of the things that I've realized is that I'd rather own up to my past and the mistakes that I've made and the things that I'm not so proud of in the midst of receiving praise and acknowledgement for the things that I am very proud of that are incredibly public, like my work and like, you know, the clients that I serve. I'd rather those things happen in more of a well-rounded and honest reflection than present an image of myself as being completely infallible and perfect. That for all the people that have benefited from my services, there are a lot of people that have had to sacrifice, you know, and that I've had to make sacrifices for. There are a lot of canceled meetings with my family. You know, there are a lot of days that I wasn't able to hang out with people. You know, these are things that happen. And I think in order to understand the success on a business level or on a commercial level or professional level of any individual, you kind of have to be willing to accept that there are a whole group of people all around them that have to deal with, you know, broken appointment dates or late dinners or canceled meetings because it is irrational to run a business. You know, it doesn't make any sense. It's irrational to be an artist. So many things that drive artists and careers are so irrational that, you know, when they all kind of come together, it is like a miracle. And right now I'm beginning to experience some of the blessing of, you know, all these investments and sacrifices that I've made. But at the same time, I don't want to forget that there has been a cost that I've had to pay.
I think that what you were saying about communication in a relationship extends to communication in a society. And I think that it's really important that people communicate their stories, especially the ones that are painful and the ones that make them uncomfortable. So I really respect that you're talking with me about this.
And I want to thank you, honestly, for encouraging me to share it, because I don't think I would have otherwise had you not been so adamant about me becoming more vocal and public about this. I think one of the things that people may not fully understand is that, you know, it was through realizing how dysfunctional my relationships were and, you know, being at weddings and, like, crying, not because I was like, you know, oh, my God, this is such a beautiful moment, but I was crying because I'm like, oh, my God, I've never seen anything like this. I can't personally relate to this wedding at all because it is so detached from an experience that I've ever had, but I want something like that for myself. I want to experience that quality of an awesome relationship because the client engagements that I've had, the relationships that I've been able to form with couples who really are in love, who have great love stories, the experience that I've had through dysfunction in my own relationships has almost propelled me even further to explore the best practices that couples are showing through, you know, their relationships. So I never thought that, you know, the two would link up, that my personal life and my professional life were so connected, but they are. And I think as I've embraced that more, I've been able to see how much I seek that.
Well, thank you for speaking with me.
Thank you, honestly, for giving me this opportunity.